Let's go! 3, 2, 1.
Dumbass!
Welcome to another episode of Functional Fundamentals. I'm Dave.
I'm Mike.
And today we are going to talk about
deadlifts.
Deadlifts and farmer's walk. Just two awesome movement patterns that reap a lot of benefits that may not be immediately apparent to everybody.
I just want to say deadlifts for the next half hour.
Just scream deadlifts, deadlifts, deadlifts.
So if you scream deadlifts, it actually makes you perform better deadlifts. It's like
really?
When you do a bear crawl and you growl like a bear.
Yeah.
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 Or you do a cobra, you make the hiss of a cobra.
And you do better.
You do better. Or the cat and cow in yoga. I mean, Natalie would agree to that one.
I'm pretty sure she would. Yeah. I don't mind putting words into her mouth right now. She would definitely agree that any animal pose you do in yoga, if you mimic that animal's sound, you'll do it better.
Like dragon's breath.
not dragon's breath. Natalie, no more dragon's breath.
But it's the truth. If you say what you're doing, you'll do better at it. Like, if I say I'm going to smack David a lot, like, I'm going to smack David, I'm going to smack David, I'm going to smack David, mm-hmm. It'll hurt harder.
Yeah, that's actually very true. He almost hit me earlier. And, I mean, I'm still able to speak right now, but if there's ever an episode where it's just Mike, then he smacked me too much.
Yes. Well, okay, take Ronda Rousey. The reason she wins so much is because once she gets into the ring, she starts telling her opponent she's going to armbar him, and she armbars him.
That's
she
true.
Just keeps saying it over and over again.
Affirmations are powerful, though.
Yeah, right. You kind of went from, yeah.
On
the first couple minutes, we were all just joking, giving you guys a line of bullcrap.
However, affirmations are very positive, and I think Brad, he's spoken on it a couple times, how positive affirmations help him. And obviously, he competes very well in jiu-jitsu and everything. And just today, I was using some positive affirmations with the deadlifts we were doing because I was a little nervous about the weight because we were increasing it. But, you know, I just kind of – I don't know that it was necessarily a positive affirmation, but just kind of reminding myself of this little checklist I had to do. When you know, like, lower my butt, put my chest out, load the weight, and go. Like, there's no issue. Like, you're not going to stop. You're just going to go. And just do it. So that really helped with me as far as the deadlift was going today. I'm sure everybody has their experiences with the positive affirmations that they could share.
So, yeah, positive affirmations are great. So, like a Ronda Rousey that probably tells in her mind how she probably mimics or probably visualizes what she's going to do before she gets in the ring.
Yeah.
Same you see that with professional golfers.
Well, I saw, like, a little clip. I don't know if it was a commercial or something but about her, and she had the positive affirmations. Like, she writes them out or something and puts on an alarm clock. And then she said, like, her biggest thing is, like, you I know I'm probably going to mess it up a little bit, but, like, you haven't earned the right to beat me or something
like that.
That.
Yeah, like, I like that line.
And that's pretty cool.
But I've seen where, you know, professional golfers will talk about it where they have a game plan and they know exactly how they're going to hit every ball and how they're going to putt and where they're going to put the ball. So that before they play their round, they've already visualized it all. I've seen when I used to play baseball and probably more extent in the major leagues is where I had a scouting report of every player I was going to participate against, and I knew how I was going to get him out, what pitch I was going to get him out with, how I was going to lead him. I mean, so I basically played the game already in my head, which made it easier.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a whole different episode that we'll get to because that's a great one to talk about. But today we're going to stick with deadlifts and farmer's walks and the importance of it because I believe it's a lift that if it's done correctly and put in an efficient program, it is probably one of the single best lifts there is. Now, again, I'm not saying it's better than a push-up, a squat, a clean, or any of those other kind of things, but I'm just saying if it's done correctly, I think it's one of the best functional exercises we can do because we do deadlifts a lot throughout the day in just normal day life.
Yeah.
You know, picking up a bag, picking up a box, picking up groceries, mm-hmm. picking up a dog. Like, I have a bulldog, which, you know, I got to reach down and pick her up. If I didn't lift her up correctly because it's dead weight, like a deadlift, you know, she's whopping around like a little worm.
Mm-hmm.
That additional movement from her, if I don't lift her correctly, my spine will just boom.
Yeah, and that's the deadlift teaches you how to stabilize that.
Yeah, it's a great lift. It teaches good posture. It teaches development of power through the hips, the ankles, up through the shoulders. It gets your abdomen to fire. So many good things happen with the deadlift, but I see so many people do it wrong. They have that Quasimodo back or the scared cat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see it a lot, and you're like, oh, I just lifted, 400 pounds.
But you did it incorrectly, and you really did some damage that may not be immediately apparent, but it's going to build.
Yes. Well, take you, for instance. You're in good shape. You're young. You're vital. You can get by doing something wrong, but every time you do something wrong, it's cutting the years down that your body's going to last you.
Yeah.
And then say you keep doing things wrong for 5 years, 6 years, 7 years. So now 10 years go by.
I'm picking up some groceries.
You're picking up some groceries. And it's the smallest thing. You can pick up a pillow.
Small, yeah.
You pick up
I find out I have a bulged disc. I slipped the disc.
And you're like, how did I get that? How did I hurt my back picking up a pillow or picking up a cat or picking up, a thing of chocolate-covered espresso beans, dark chocolate from Myers.
Are absolutely delicious, but don't eat too many of them because they don't tell you that they contain quite a bit of caffeine.
Yeah.
There's literally nothing on the bag saying that.
Yeah, it just makes your eyes twitch after you get about 6 or 7 minutes. So you pick something up like that weighs no more than a pound, and all of a sudden you throw your back out. I'm like, how did I throw my back out picking that up when I'm deadlifting 400 pounds? Well, it's because you've been doing it wrong for so long.
Mm-hmm.
Your body gets stuck in that fused position.
You've taught yourself how to move incorrectly.
Incorrectly. So then when you pick something up, like, okay, I'm just going to reach down, pick it up, normal. And it's like, uh-oh, can't do that because our body's not made to lift that way.
Yeah, your body finally goes, I don't like this anymore. And it sends you that little shock of pain.
Yeah, and you probably felt pain before. You probably, I had a little pain in my hammy or my glute was a little tired. Yeah. My lower back was tired.
Yeah, that's where I've talked to people in there. They've done their deadlifts incorrectly, and they're like, my lower back's a little tight, but, I imagine that's pretty normal.
Yeah, it's pretty normal. Just go ahead.
Actually, it's not, but...
No, it's not. Now, it can feel tight. Tight is like, when you wake up, and you're like, wow, I'm just sore today. Like, man, I really lifted up. You do your rehab. If it goes away, you're good.
Yeah.
But if it's a lingering thing, like if you can't move because of the pain...
Like that ache.
Yes, like you rolled your ankle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That is bad, but people are like, it's part of it.
Yeah, the
it's
whole like no pain, no gain mentality.
Oh, yeah. No pain, no gain. Again, as we said in previous, I think it was previous podcasts. Yeah, it might be future podcasts. We're kind of all screwed up now in our filming, but working out is for the future. Again, it's like, when you invest money in a bank or invest money in stocks or something like that, you're not putting money in there for today.
No.
You're putting for the future. Again, when you work out or when you train or when you eat well or when you sleep well, you're invested in yourself for the future.
Absolutely.
And people don't get that. They're like, I'm going to kill it today. Well, why are you going to kill it today? Because you're going to be screwed for the next 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm going to kill it today in the financial market. What are you going to do? Well, I'm going to pull all my money out, and I'm going to buy a waffle iron.
What are you going to do tomorrow?
Or a whizzle whack.
Yeah.
What's a whizzle whack? I don't know, but it's going to help me today. But then tomorrow you wake up, and your whizzle whack broke, and you have no more money. It's like, you invest in yourself. So when people – it's a good sales pitch people always use. Like, invest in yourself, invest in yourself, invest in yourself mentally, physically – nutritionally and spiritually or financially. I'm like, okay, so when we invest in something, like if I invest in you or you invest in me, you're not expecting to return today.
No.
You're expecting to turn down the road.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say no pain, no gain, well, okay, I get that. There's a fine line with that because if I literally get to that point of pain.
That's how you describe pain.
Well, we call it suffering.
Right.
And it's not physical suffering, it's mental suffering.
Yeah.
Because again, if you're on a plank for 5 minutes and your form is relatively decent, you're not going to hurt yourself.
No.
But your mind's going to be like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to do this anymore.
Absolutely.
You're
stepping outside of your comfort zone.
Yes. And that goes back to the whole thing. Again, doing deadlifts the right way will take you out of your comfort zone because I've seen guys come in and they'll deadlift 500 pounds and they're like, I want to get to 550, but I hit a plateau. All right, let's go ahead and do it. Let's do a physical assessment, see where you are. Your ankles don't work well. Your knees don't track the way they should. Your hip doesn't have a very good hinge, and your core is weak. You'll never get 550 because your body has basically said, I can't lift with you, the way your body is right now, any more weight.
Right.
If I do, things are going to start exploding.
Yeah.
So then I take them through the assessment. I say, okay, this is what we need to do. And then we have to cut their deadlift down almost in half to reteach the movement. And most of them are like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Why am I going to do that? That's not any fun for me. I want to get this today.
Right.
So they lose the whole idea of investing in themselves.
Tie in their success to that number.
Yes. And then I said, okay, this is what we're going to do. For 6 weeks, we're not going to do a deadlift. We're not going to get out of the bar at all. We're going to do things to mentally make you suffer. We're going to do high pulls and power cleans and walking lunges with weights and all these other exercises, sprinting and heavy rowing. And people are probably asking, how is sprinting and heavy rowing going to help my deadlift? Well, a deadlift is a powerful movement.
Yeah.
Sprinting is a powerful movement. Doing powerful movements will help you better at other powerful movements.
Yeah, because my deadlift has increased each time we've done it. But since I've started, back in May? Mm-hmm. Or
ish.
Yeah. So nearly, 6 months ago.
Yep.
We've only done deadlift. It's definitely been under 10 times of doing the deadlift. I want to say maybe like once a month.
Essentially.
If that.
And we've only done heavy twice.
That's true.
We've done not heavy reps, but we've done high volume. And then we've done, like today we did a heavy rep or heavy weight. Because you don't need to do heavy weight all the time. It's like the only thing you do to get better at is, like say, you get – to be good at CrossFit, you do CrossFit. That's what you do. To be good at playing baseball, it's not essentially you play baseball. You do little things to make your craft better.
Yeah.
Again, when I was playing, I just didn't pick up a baseball and throw it. I worked on to make sure my mechanics were perfect. So I did a lot of dry drills of, you know, going through the baseball mechanics, the balance point, the power S, making sure I was getting good rotation with my hips.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like 10 different exercises I did to make one movement correctly.
Yeah, same thing with like mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
You're not just going to like just fighting in a cage repeatedly. It's not going to make you better. But when you take those movements and isolate them, that's what I mean, mixed martial arts. It's combined with everything. So you're like, well, today I'm going to focus on my stand up. And then the next day, I'm going to focus on my wrestling. And I'm going to focus on my jiu-jitsu. And I'm going to focus on my cage work. You're isolating all these things, and you're making improvements in each of those small areas. And then later, when you compete again, you're better at everything. Yeah.
You're absolutely right. I mean, take a deadlift, okay? For a deadlift to perform correctly, you need good ankle mobility.
Mm-hmm.
You need good hip stability, so you need tension, but it also needs to be loose.
Right.
You need a proper way to fire your glute, so you have a good hip hinge, so your glute can pop forward.
You got to be able to
core strength.
Core strength, and
you need to have good depression of your shoulder blades.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a lot of things to do one movement.
I could never have done the deadlift when I started.
No.
Because my depression of the shoulder blades.
You had very bad depression of the shoulder blades.
It was terrible.
Plus, your ankle mobility wasn't very good.
Absolutely.
So those things will inhibit you from doing a deadlift correctly. Now, I'm not saying you can't do a deadlift, but you're not going to do it to the way I say is efficiently to get you to as strong as you possibly can.
Yeah.
Take a car, for instance. Okay? To do a deadlift, you have a lot of moving parts and a lot of things that need to work in unison to perform one movement. It's like telling you to do a deadlift with no carburetor. With 3 spark plugs instead of 4, depending on the size of the engine, or 3 tires, or no fan belt. You need so many things to work together
mm-hmm.
to perform one movement, which is the deadlift. So if I want to do the deadlift, I just can't keep doing the deadlift to be good at the deadlift.
No.
I need to work on my...
Isolate those things. Work on those things.
I need to make sure all those things work together. It's like anything else. Again, if I have a race car, or I just have a car, period, I can't just keep changing the oil and expect it's always going to work properly.
Right.
I have to change the tires, the brakes, the rotors, the camshaft. All these things have to be replaced or maintained
mm-hmm.
to allow the car to run. Deadlift's the same thing. Human body's the same way. To perform the deadlift at its best, I need to make sure everything else is either performed or maintained correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, we're never performing the deadlift correctly. And you see people do deadlift. You just type down deadlift on YouTube, and you see so many people doing it. And say there's 100,000 videos of people doing deadlifts, probably 10% of them are done correctly.
Yeah. And we saw one that was a prime example of what not to do.
Yes. And he was like, oh man, I just missed my 400. I'm gonna go 395. Oh, I missed my 395, but I'm doing great. And it looked like someone had a, like a, was hanging them from, like a meat hanging from a rafters.
Yeah.
I mean,
scared cat.
Oh, you could see his, because he had no shirt on, you could see his spinal cord poking through his
back.
Yeah,
there was nothing protecting it.
I mean, it was just, it's disgusting. But we see that and we accept that it's normal. Again, today we saw someone doing a deadlift, and when they finished, they were overextending their spine when they got to the top position. It's like, guys.
So they kind of look like a banana if you stand them up.
Yes. It was horrible. But we think, oh, I deadlift this. Because the deadlift is the new bench press.
Right.
That seems to be it. Like, mm-hmm. How much do you bench, bro? Oh, I bench 250, 225.
How much do you deadlift, bro?
It's now how much do you deadlift?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, geez. You should really be concerned of how much you lift, because I do it for just a sense. Okay, where are you strength-wise? Is our body functional? You know, that's why I always say, okay, are we dominant? Or are we efficient both left and right? Are we efficient both posterior and anterior? Let's do some things to figure if we are. Mm-hmm. Are we efficient both sprinting and endurance? There's a few standards we have for that.
Mm-hmm.
Are we efficiently in creating power and endurance and strength? Those are just basic standards. Again, deadlifting twice your body weight, which is our standard, it's not like, oh my God, that's impossible. It's just, it's showing us that we're strong. We can lift twice our body weight.
Yeah, so don't care. Like, you shouldn't care about what someone else is deadlifting.
No.
Some guy that weighs 100 more pounds than you should be deadlifting more than you.
Yes, he has more mass. That's why he should be lifting more. But can he run? Can he do, say, like the beast exercise? Can he do a row? Can he do the biathlon? Can he crawl? Can he do all these simple movements? Because to be honest, who cares if I can deadlift 600 pounds unless I'm a competitive deadlifter?
Right.
But if I'm not, who cares?
Yeah, what does it matter?
How
does it improve your quality of life?
How does it improve your quality of life? After I get past my standard, which would be twice your body weight, I just put weight on the bar and lift. If I can't lift it, okay. No big deal.
Yeah.
I just lift. I just see how much. I just put stuff on the thing and lift.
Yeah, I mean, because you still want to push yourself outside of your comfort zone. You want to improve. You want to challenge yourself. But at that point, it's just to see how much you've improved.
Right. I mean, I know I can deadlift.
Unless you decide all of a sudden you want a specific goal.
Yeah. I mean, me weighing 190, I know I can lift more than 380. That's all I'm concerned about. Mm-hmm. I did pull up quite a bit the other day because someone was watching me. And they coached me through it, and they told me what I was lifting. Because I was just putting weight on.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I did my standard, I'm like, okay, let's just start putting stuff on, see how far I can go before I can't lift anymore. But it's to the point where I know how strong I am. And now next month, the month of November, which I call it the Movember Row-member month. So for anybody listening, if you want to join, we don't shave. If we do shave, we try to keep clean. No shaving and a lot of rowing. It's Row-member and Movember.
How much are you rowing?
The objective is
to... You gonna do the calendar?
Huh?
You gonna do a calendar row?
That crossed my mind, but I don't think I want to do 31,000 meters.
No, 100.
100 a day?
Yeah. So you increase... The most you're doing is 3,000 meters. 3,100 meters.
3,100 meters in a day?
How many... Is it 30 days in November?
It's 30. Yeah, 30 days. So 3,000... Yeah, I can do that.
You can do that?
We'll do that. That's okay. Well, essentially, I did this once last year, which was... every workout I did some sort of row, either be like 100 meters, 250, something like that. And the way I did it, broke it down was, you know, instead of doing, like I do a heavy lift,
mm-hmm.
instead of either resting or doing pull-ups or push-ups or something else, I would do a row. And then at the end of every week, I would do 2,000 meter row. So once a week, I do 2,000 meter row. So I like your idea. So we'll do that. And then we'll also do once a week, 2,000 meter row until we get to the 20s, because that's going to just suck ass. But... So that's what we're going to do. We call it the Row Member Month. So row your asses off in November.
Yeah. Each calendar day, you just do 100 meters, 100 times whatever that day is. So the first, it's just 100 meters. Second, 200. Third, 300.
That's new. That's new. I like that. That's new.
It's an awesome challenge, especially if you have access to a gym with a row machine.
And then the objective is every week you want to do some kind of row standard, which would be either a 500, 1,000, 2,000, or 5,000 standard, and you try to do it. That's the kind of how it's based upon, but I like your idea too, throwing that in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we do it, you can do it anytime. So if say you have your, say it's we're on the 24th, So that's 2,400 meters of row you should be doing. You can do that anytime throughout the day. So it doesn't have to be all at one time. You just need 2,400 meters through that day.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can throw your standard in sometime that week. But and then you don't shave for men. Women, you couldn't really do what you need to do. But for men, don't shave. And then if you do shave, make sure you're going to clean your neck up, but don't ruin the beards. So, yeah, that's our November thing. But back to the deadlift is it's a great exercise to learn,
mm-hmm.
but I will never tell anybody to do a deadlift without me seeing them face-to-face or video chat. I won't talk to them over the phone. I won't do any of that stuff because the main reason is you can tell someone – I lift this, you know, I bench this, I squat this, I should deadlift this. Well, yeah, you could. But if you look at the bench, even the squat, there's some things that are isolated that aren't firing necessarily in a deadlift. Because a deadlift, you need a lot of good shoulder depression,
mm-hmm.
which you don't really need in a squat.
You had me doing like the Scat Masters and stuff.
Yes.
Before I even touched that.
And because you needed to learn
that depression. We had to fix my ankle mobility issue, and we had to fix my shoulder depression issue before we even – because I was very – was it anterior?
Anterior dominant, yeah.
My posterior system was non-existent. My anterior system dominated when it came to that. I was real – I was powerful in the front, but as far as, like, my backside, I didn't have nearly as much.
Remember the cartoon with the turtle when the turtle takes his shell off and he's got his little underwear and he's kind of –
Right.
Really sloped over.
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of like you.
Yeah.
He was like shoulders rolled forward, like, no, I don't have my shell anymore.
But the good news is we took the time to dissect and analyze and really fix it.
Yes.
So now I feel good. I'm improving on my deadlifts all the time.
Yes. And we don't do deadlifts a lot.
No.
Because everything else is getting stronger as well. Like your hip hinge is getting stronger. Your posterior system is getting stronger.
I'm doing snatches. I'm doing I'm trying to think what else is involved.
Kettlebell swings.
Yeah, I'm doing kettlebell swings for my hips. I'm doing snatches. I'm doing planks to work on my core. I'm doing
front squats, back squats.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm working my grip on various things, ring holds.
We're doing a lot of things that are helping.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing people don't get is, well, I'm strong. I should deadlift because deadlift is the new thing. Well, there's more things that can go wrong in a deadlift than can go right.
Yes.
So just if you want to do deadlift, I say go for it, but go seek a professional. Don't go seek the biggest, strongest guy at the gym. Go find a strength coach and tell him, show me a deadlift. I want you to assess me on if I can do a deadlift correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And then take heed in what they're saying. Listen to them. If they say you're not ready for a deadlift, be like, okay, I'm not ready. They have my best interest in mind.
Yeah.
So – and before you even start a deadlifting program, figure out what's your goal. Why do you want to deadlift?
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't just be like, I just want to get strong. Well, no. Deadlifting, to be honest, it doesn't really encompass strength like it would for a squat or bench because you're not going to get huge doing deadlifting. But it makes you very efficient on creating power from the ground up.
Yeah.
And it teaches you how to control posture. And again, if you don't have a good posture – you can't deadlift.
Yeah.
You just can't because you'll see what that kid did today. I mean, his shoulders were really rolled forward, and then he picked up the deadlift. So when he tried to lock it out, which is just standing up with the weight, he couldn't stand up straight because his shoulders were so rolled forward. So he had to
compensate by throwing his hips forward.
And causing
– put a tremendous amount of stress on his lower back.
Yeah, caught a lordosis of his spine, which – because if your shoulders are forward, the only way you can finish – the lift is literally pull your shoulders back because you can't decompress your shoulders. And if you can't decompress your shoulders, it's very hard to load your hips.
So tonight when he goes home, he probably has a lot of back, like an ache in his lower back, and probably deals a lot with shoulder pain already because they're rolled forward.
Yeah, and he's thinking – I'm okay. I lifted heavy today. Mm-hmm. That's the gains.
Right.
That's just the gains.
Yeah.
It's the gains, bro.
Maybe I'll drink an extra protein shake and it'll go away.
Yeah. I'll be fine. It's just the gains. And that's what happens is like fighters, golfers, baseball players, just any athlete in general. They wake up the next day and they're like, oh, my knee hurts or my back hurts. Oh, it's part of the sport.
They chalk
it's
it up.
It's part of the sport. It's not. Fighting's probably the only sport you can get away with, like, man, my arm really hurts. My face hurts. That's part of the sport. That's probably the only one because you're physically getting hit.
Yeah. So there should be some fatigue.
Some pain
if you got hit or maybe you got kneed in the ribs or something like that.
Football, another thing. It's probably one of those things.
Impact sports, you're going to deal with that.
But golf, my spine should not hurt. A lot of people's spines do hurt because they have immobility in their body. And I see it all the time. They hit the crap out of the ball. But they're like, well, my back hurts after, 72 holes or, three or four rounds of golf in a row. My back hurts. Well, why? Oh, it's just golf. It's just part of golf, bro.
Bro.
Bro. We say bro to indicate an idiot, by the way. So,
science.
Yeah. So, and it's like, no, your body should rotate with enough force that your body can slow down without causing any shear force in your spine. But people don't realize that. Like, well, I just golf. Golfing is a bad thing for our backs. No, if it's done correctly, it's not.
Yeah. When we had Charles Schultz, we talked a lot about deceleration.
Mm-hmm. The truth is we can only accelerate as great as we can decelerate.
Yep.
It's like a funny car. A funny car goes 380 miles an hour. But if it didn't have that parachute,
right?
Is that going 385 miles an hour? I'm sorry. I mean, that's the way things are. And when it comes to golf, they're rotating with so much force, so much torque on that spine. And I'm like, oh, it's just my back. Well, no, your back is jacked up because it's probably, and most of the time, it's because of ankles. Ankles and posterior strength is what the problem is.
Right. They're not getting the rotation through there.
No. I had a kid that was complaining of lower back pain. Complained about it all the time. And he's a college athlete. He's very good. He came in, worked on his ground force production, worked on hip rotation, worked on ankle mobility. His deadlift went from 285 to 340 over the summertime. No more back pain. And he's hitting a snot out of the ball. But the difference is he bought into it. I told him, this is what you need to reduce your back pain. Now, he still has aches and pains because he does play a sport. He does put a lot of strain on. But he knows what to do, so the pain is a couple days or a couple hours. He's able to manage, but he's not waking up going, oh, I can't move. Yeah. There was times he had to pull out of tournaments because
he
couldn't.
Chronic pain.
Yeah. There's times he had to withdraw from tournaments because his back hurt so bad.
Wow.
But now he didn't have.
All in college and his back hurt that.
Yeah. But now he doesn't deal with that anymore because his posterior system is so strong. He understands what it means to have good ankle mobility versus poor ankle mobility. So when he sees that it's not working well, he can.
Identify and fix it.
Yep. Yeah. Identify and fix it. And then, boom, he's hitting the snot. And again, he's probably maybe 6 foot, 180 pounds, and he hits the ball 325, 330 off the tee.
Wow.
Just stupid power because he can generate so much force. And a lot of it was we think about if I over-rotate in a kick or over-rotate in a golf swing or a bat swing, my hip will deviate with that over-rotation, thus reducing the amount of rotational force I have because it's wasted energy. It's like if you grab a bucket full of water and you start swinging around your head and all of a sudden you deviate your elbow slightly a little bit so the movement arm changes. Well, that bucket's going to stop moving real quick because we're out of pattern and all of a sudden the pattern slightly changes. So force is leaked out, the best way to explain it. So if I rotate if I throw a punch and my hip leaks out, so it doesn't rotate very well because my ankle over-rotates and my hip dips to the side, I'm losing power. And not only do I lose power, is the force that's generated has to be slowed down from my spine instead of my hip.
Yeah.
So a good example is if I throw a punch and my hip over-rotates or my ankle over-rotates too much and my hip goes to the side, all that shear force goes to my spine.
Yeah.
And that's where we get back problems. That's how golfers get back issues. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to the deadlift, if I lift that weight and I shoot my hips forward because I have lack of rotation in my shoulders or my ankles or anything else, it's almost like the same thing. I'm over-rotating my ankle. So all that force has to be stopped somewhere and it's stopped in my spine instead of my upper back.
Right.
I know I said a lot of stuff there. Hopefully it made some sense. Did it?
If it didn't, email us.
Or replay it.
Yeah.
You can't really slow it now.
Keep listening.
Over-rotate. Yeah, I don't know if you can do that. Or speed it up with something like Alvin.
Yeah, I mean, the force has to go somewhere.
Yes. Well, it's like anything else. It's like when you shoot a gun, the firing pin hits the shell explodes, or the gunpowder explodes, and all the force generated shoots into the bullet, and the bullet goes forward.
Yep.
force has to go somewhere. If I put something in that chamber to clog it up, the force still has to go somewhere.
Yeah.
So it goes back where it came from.
And that's, well, I mean, you might have seen like a picture of a gun, like where the, like a rifle, and
yeah, just it explodes out.
The muzzle is just gone.
So it's not, I wouldn't say it's the same thing, but if I'm rotating, I'm supposed to rotate and my hips rotate through and all my force is generated through, say, my fist, a golf club, a baseball, or a bat, all that force is generated that way. But if I go to the position where my body doesn't rotate, it almost rotates too much, so instead of the force going forward, it goes slightly to the side. Well, the force still has to leave your body somehow. So a lot of it happens is it goes back to the source.
Right.
And you see that a lot when a guy throws a punch and he's leaning backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And you can just see his back through that curvature spine.
Yeah.
It's because his weight didn't transfer. He couldn't rotate. He couldn't cause ground force production. You see that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to you, a friend that we know really well. He was complaining of some back issues, and we worked on some things, and I taught him how to generate force from front to back, and his punching power just increased so much, and he's a high-level hitter.
Oh, right, yeah.
I mean, I told you about that.
Mm-hmm.
I tried it. Yeah. I was like, here, turn into me, and I was like, okay, now step, rotate, and turn into me, and he knocked me down. I'm like, okay,
yeah.
We're not going to do that again. But it's the same thing, and that's what we did. That kid was – we increased the deadlift. We taught him how to load his system correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And so the deadlift built posterior strength. It built hip hinge. And then we take that fundamental and we put it in a functional movement like rotation and ground force production, and then that's how we get a better athlete, a better human. And that's just what we do. A deadlift is not the see-all, end-all of an exercise. It is what kind of gives us like – the groundwork to make us a better functioning human, because mm-hmm. if we don't have good posture, we can't deadlift.
Right.
If you don't have good posture, you can't do anything well or efficient.
No.
So before we get on to the next thing, another great postural exercise is, what do you remember the first thing that we did at the deadlift and how I explained it to you and what you kind of learned from it?
You had me do the bands on the trap bar.
Explain it.
So there are, you just take some resistance bands. You, instead of putting weights on the bar, and this is the trap bar, the trapezoid, or the hexagon. So you're standing in the middle of it. And the difference between that and using a straight bar is that it's, the handles aren't out in front of you because you're not grabbing onto a straight bar. You actually have handles off to the sides. So it's forcing your shoulders to depress. You're not reaching out in front of you, grabbing anything and lifting it up. So it's a little, it's safer. It's making you off to the sides. So there's no way you can reach in front of you and do that. So you're taking the resistance bands, instead of putting weight on it, where you would normally put the weight on the sides, you run a resistance band from one end under it to the other end, and you stand on it. So you're standing on that resistance band, and then you're doing your deadlift motion. And because you're using the trap bar, it's forcing you to depress your shoulders. And because you're using the resistance band, you really have to work on using your hips. And you're going to engage your hips, you're going to engage your legs, and it's teaching you slowly how to do the deadlift properly. It's a very safe way to do it, absolutely, as well. Because if I fail, it's a resistance band. Nothing bad's gonna happen. So I was able to learn how to depress my shoulders, engage my hips, and keep my core tight, which was one of the things that was much more important than I realized at the time, because that my entire posture hinges on my core being tight, being engaged. And when it wasn't engaged was when I was leaning over too much. But because there was no weight, because we were just using the resistance band, there was no I wasn't risking anything. Mike was there watching me, making sure I was doing it correct. We were tweaking it. And then later, I mean like a month later when we actually put weight on it, I was able to do much more than I thought I'd be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
So we stayed with the trap bar for a while because, again, the handles are off to the sides, making sure I could depress my shoulders. It was forcing me to depress my shoulders because we identified that as one of my weakness areas anyway. And then within the past month, we've actually moved to the straight bar. And because I took all that time to work on depressing my shoulders, engage my core, keep my chest up, butt lowered, taking that time on the trap bar, and with other exercises as well, I was able to do our deadlift. The deadlift with the straight bars increased. The first time I did it was, what, like
We just did 225 to do this first time.
225 was the very first time. Because the trap bar, you'll be able to get higher because it's like a hybrid movement.
Mm-hmm.
But then today we jumped up to 275. 55 for a couple of them. And then at the end, I was able to do 275. So that's a 50-pound increase.
And this is the second time you've done a deadlift with a straight bar.
Yes.
And you've done 315 with the trap bar.
Yes.
So it's increased, and you probably could go even higher on your straight bar. And your goal is what, 360, 370? That's your goal?
Yeah, right around there.
Yeah. So we're right on path. And for someone that hasn't been only deadlifting for less than 6 weeks, that's pretty good. I mean, I've been deadlifting for quite a while, and it took me up here. But again, we can always get strong in the deadlift because if your body is functional and is working the way it's meant to work, we'll always be able to increase our deadlift because for us to increase deadlift, we need good ankle mobility, good hip mobility and stability, good hip hinge, good core strength, and good shoulder depression.
Yeah.
We've
been doing all those in between that.
Yeah.
You know, I've been doing kettlebell swings like crazy.
Yes.
Been doing snatches like crazy.
So all those things are helping.
Mm-hmm.
And not only does that help you become a better deadlifter, but also helps you become a more functional human.
Mm-hmm.
You walk taller. And again, some people don't believe me, but I will stick to it. And if I get the time, I will write a research paper on it. Standing taller helps cognitive thinking and breathing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you just look at how the body functions, your lungs right there. If you're leaning forward, you're putting your weight on your lungs, on your cardiovascular system as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to have to work harder. And it's not going to be as efficient. But when you stand tall, when you engage your abs, you're protecting your spine. Your blood flow is just better. So you're going to be quicker as far as your mental reactions. And, of course, you're going to be able to breathe better. Just think of if someone just cradles you like a baby and then just kind of crunches you in.
Like a baby.
How hard it is to breathe right there. I mean, just crunch all the way down. Take your chin to your knees.
Like as close as possible. Plane crash?
Yeah. And try to breathe. Try to breathe efficiently. Now, stand up tall and feel how nice it is to breathe.
Let me ask you this. When you have an important telephone call or you have an important speech or you have a kind of biggest thing is an important telephone call. Are you sitting down? Or what are you doing? How are you answering yourself?
Are you going to be slouched? Or are you going to just sit there and kind of like your physical, how your posture is going to indicate how engaged you are. You need to be engaged. You ever see someone when they get really excited at the table, they stand up.
Mm-hmm. Poker is a good example.
Yeah, absolutely. They start standing up. Their blood flow starts going.
Well, again, when I have a telephone conference call, and I'm talking to somebody and it's an important telephone call, I don't sit.
No,
I'm pacing the house. I'm up walking around. Mm-hmm. I speak clear. I have better thought. I'm more engaged. I don't get like steamrolled by the other individual on the other end.
Yeah, you're ready to react.
I'm ready to react. Again, it's those little things. It's like when we stand up tall, when we have better posture, when our head is forward, our shoulders are back, we breathe better. Thus, we get more oxygen into our muscles, mm-hmm. and we can think better.
Yeah. I mean, if you notice, a lot of white collar businesses are on the whole like ergonomic kick lately. In these past like, I want to say 4 years, it's been huge. So they've adapted. They brought in strength conditioning coaches to work with them, but also a lot of people are using stand up desks now.
Mm-hmm.
I personally have a stand up desk, and it's much better. I just feel more awake during my day because I'm engaged. I'm engaging these legs that make up over half of my body. It's your biggest muscles, and you're engaged. If mm-hmm. they're not engaged, if you're sitting down, if you're slouched, you're engaging, I mean, less than a third of your actual, your body, then, well, less than a third of your brain's going to be engaged.
Yeah, I mean, it's just yeah, when you're up moving around, you're always seeming more awake. When you sit, you know, like, oh, I'm so tired.
But like if you're laying down on the couch watching TV, how you easy just, it is to fall asleep.
Yeah, but then you all of a sudden you get up and it's like, ooh, I'm up, I'm awake.
Yeah.
It's because everything's going. So let's quickly give a quick little description of the importance of a farmer's walk. We're kind of getting close to that magic minute.
Farmer's walk?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're going to grab...
Okay, don't make it too quick. Mm-hmm. But just grab some weights and walk around like a farmer.
Grab some weights and walk around. I mean, that easy. No, so we talked about the core being engaged, the shoulders being depressed for the deadlift. Well, the farmer's walk is similar in that. So you can take a set of dumbbells or kettlebells, whatever's comfortable. You're going to grab them. You're going to hold them by your side. You're going to stand up. You're going to make sure your core is engaged because you don't want any swing in your spine or hips. And also, your shoulders are depressed. So you're not holding those weights out in front of you. You're going to be holding them to your side, maybe even just right parallel with your hips. And you're just walking forward. You're gripping, you're walking, you just want to reduce the...
You're gripping, you're walking, we're talking.
You're talking, maybe your coach is talking to you, teasing you, making you do push-ups if you stop. But if you do a farmer's walk, it's fantastic to work on the depression of your shoulders because the further, the longer you walk, the harder it is to hold that weight. But you're depressing your shoulders and you're holding that position for a long time. So you're really teaching your body what it's like to be there. And the thing is, if you don't depress your shoulders, you're gonna feel your the front caps of your shoulders start to fatigue very quickly, and your forearms are going to fatigue, and your grip's going to fatigue. It's going to be much harder. You're going to drop the weights.
Yes.
But and then again, like you're engaging your abs because you want to reduce the sway. You're just walking in a straight line towards wherever your end goal is, reducing that swing. I mean, if you feel you're starting to swing in your hips, so that's your spine, and it's no good.
And the deadlift, or not the deadlift, but the farmer's walk is a great postural exercise because to do it,
you have to stand up straight.
Yeah, it's almost like if any military guy's listening, it's like when the drill sergeant's telling you to get detention. Your shoulders are back, your chest is forward, your head is up, no movements done on the arms, and you're just holding weight. Heavier the better, because it just shows from your grip all the way to your shoulders, upper back, to abdomen. It gets it all. It's an encompassing exercise. It's similar to doing a deadlift without the hip hinge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, because you are getting some activation in legs because you're walking. You're getting activation in the shoulder. You need decompression of the shoulder blade to keep make sure your spine's in a protected position. You need to keep your core tight because if you want to avoid too much rotation of the hips when you walk, because again, walking is a transversal movement, so you got to be careful with that. But it's a great exercise to one, just to kill somebody, to, you know, let's end it, you know, let's end this workout, let's go farmer's walk.
It tests you mentally. Definitely tests you mentally. Like how, because you're gonna feel your grip slip, and you're gonna sit there and you're gonna think, do I drop it now? Do I drop it now and do those 10 push-ups?
Yeah.
Am I going to be able to pick that weight back up afterwards, or do I try to gut through it?
Yes, and that's the thing. It can be a very suffering thing.
Depends on where it's placed out in the workout, and we talked about program design and everything like that.
But you know when you do it right is when you do the farmer's walk and you put it down, and the first thing you do is you're like, oh, you just stand taller.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just you don't slouch. You normally just stand taller because all those muscles have been engaged this whole time. And they let go, and I'm like, whew, we're done holding you up. But
the tension's off. You're like, whew, this feels good.
Then it feels good to stand up straight. Mm-hmm. And that's the main reason why I do a farmer's walk, is to help teach that postural position. Because if we don't have good posture, we're not going to be good at anything we do, whether it be sport or whether it be, you know, just living a normal life or training-wise. We need to have a good posture because our body is made to work very efficiently during movement. But if we start in a bad position, the chance of a successful movement drops dramatically. Again, go back to the car thing. If our car is supposed to have everything working in unison to perform a very good run or just move up and down the streets, you know, efficiently as we think they should,
they're not going to work well if a fan belt's jacked up or if a rotor's messed up or say we have one tire that's...
The starter doesn't work,
yeah. You're never getting anywhere with that. But the idea is for things to work the way they're supposed to work, there's a lot of little things going into it. You know, we always get upset when technology doesn't work or if our computers don't work or the lights don't work in our house the way they don't work. Don't realize that it's just... If I flip a switch on, I'm expecting my light to come on. But yeah. There's a lot of things that went into that.
Yeah, you have the wires to the wall. Yeah. Everything.
I hit the on button to my laptop. It should come on. But why didn't it come on? Well, because there's a lot of things that could be causing the problem.
Yeah.
If
you have a boot up sequence on your computer and there are many programs running in the background.
Yes. And the human body has a boot up sequence too.
Yeah.
Again, if we get up and we feel achy in our knee, and I'm like, oh, why is my knee achy? Or why is my hip achy? Or why is my shoulders all, just tense?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, go through your pattern. What did you do yesterday? What did you do the day before? What's going on? Are you stressed? Are you eating well? This and that. Have you checked your ankle mobility? I mean, all these other things will cause problems. And it's almost like changing a tire for bad alignment. Mm-hmm. Your alignment's all jacked up, screwing up your tires. So you just keep changing the tire. It's like you keep changing. You have to figure out what is wrong. Mm-hmm. And again, if we do not have a good posture, a lot of things will start crumbling down.
Mm-hmm.
So first thing, how's my posture? How's my ankle mobility? How's my knee? How's my tension in my hip and my knees and my shoulders and blah, 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 blah. You need to make sure things are working correctly without weight. Just make sure you have good movement. Then you do things to help increase that movement or that posture, which would be a deadlift and farmer's walk. But funny thing is, you can't do those two exercises unless you have good postural movement to begin with. That's kind of, I guess, the catch-22.
Yeah.
Those exercises are great to increase your postural movement, postural strength. But if you don't have postural strength and stability, you can't do them anyways. I guess that is your catch-22.
Yeah, but I mean, you can...
Boom.
You can regress those movements, like we talked about with the deadlift, with the resistance bands and a trap bar.
Yes.
You can do the same thing with a farmer's walk with resistance bands if you have those. Like, just stand on a resistance band. Maybe you got them with the handles on the side.
Mm-hmm.
Just stand there.
Yeah.
Reach down, pick it up, and hold it. Engage your...
And that would be,
depress your shoulders, and just hold that resistance band. Feel it. Feel how your body should...
Shake and all that
kind of
stuff. Yeah, because that will teach hip hinge, as well as it forces you to go to shoulder depression because mm-hmm. you can't hold those bands up without squeezing your shoulders. Because if the bands start coming forward, they're gonna pull you forward.
Yep.
So
have somebody there sitting there watching you. If you need a partner, make sure your posture is good, and you hold the bands for a minute or two.
Well, the way you're doing it is you just stand on the band. You stand on the band, your back's up against the wall, and just make sure you keep your shoulder blades connected
there
to the wall.
There you go. Perfect.
So once you start feeling your shoulder blades lose...
get them back against the wall.
Yeah, lose contact with the wall, you get them back, because then you're slightly coming forward.
And that's one of the easiest to test it. If you don't have an individual who's an expert who can tell you, mm-hmm. who can work with you, if you want to test your posture, do it that way.
Find somebody, though. You always need a professional to look, because
absolutely.
Even using a mirror, using a wall, using all these weird graphs and things that they can you can buy now to see if you're in good form, nothing beats a professional eye.
Mm-hmm.
Find one, get one, know somebody. I'm sure there's so many people out there that understand the way the human body works. I'm not saying all of them are qualified, but there's a fair amount out there that can give you an idea, and if they are not the best at it, there's someone out there that they may know.
Yeah, where they learn from.
Yes. Find a professional. Even if you don't work with a strength professional, know one. Have them in your back pocket. You never know when you're going to need one.
Yeah.
It can't hurt. It's like having a good mechanic.
Yeah.
It's like you really don't want to use a mechanic, but you're glad you know one.
Absolutely.
Same with a lawyer.
Doctor. Dentist. All that stuff.
You don't want to use them, but you're glad they're there when you have to. So same with the strength coach. You may not want to use them, but you want them there in case you have to.
Mm-hmm.
You never know. All right, so we kind of hammered out the deadlift, and which I think is a great exercise, which we probably do. We won't do it today, but we need to start posting some videos on the proper way of doing a deadlift.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we need to start getting more. As the winter hits, people, we're going to start doing more and more videos, so our YouTube page will be blowing up because our goal is about 2 or 3 videos a week. So keep that in mind. So mm-hmm. go check out Pure Functional Movements / Functional Fundamentals on the YouTube page. Right now, I think we have about a dozen or so videos.
which, like I said, guys, we're going to start pumping some more out when the winter hits because we got nothing else to do.
Yeah, and if you want to see a specific video or movement pattern that we've talked about on the show, send us an email, and we'd be glad to shoot it for you. And if you have any follow-up questions, answer those.
Yeah. So, hit us up on Facebook, Instagram, what else? Facebook, Instagram, YouTube. Check out the website. Like us on iTunes. Give us a good review because the more reviews we get, the more we can keep doing this and giving you the information that you need to survive in this world.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Pretty soon, we're not going to have any more time because we're going to be destroyed by the zombie apocalypse.
Yep. It's true.
Tonight. So, any last words? Like I said, any last words, sucker?
If you use bro more than 3 times within 2 minutes, I probably don't like you.
That's harsh, bro. I mean, come on, bro.
Bro!
I haven't said the third one yet. And I won't, because I don't want people not to like me. That's just me. You know what? Screw it. Bro, bro, bro. All right, everybody. Take care. Have a good, rest of your week. And don't forget us when you listen to it and give us a good review. And if anybody that puts in the review column, bro, 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 I'm going to give you a prize. Out. This is another podcast from The Vault done a few years ago by my friend David Bray and myself. And our topic of the conversation was deadlift and farmer's carries, which are two of my favorite movement patterns, especially when you're limited in time from what they can accomplish. But this podcast was aired a few years ago under our old platform called Functional Fundamentals. And the gym podcast will start to release more podcasts throughout the week, which is going to be our Stronger Than Yesterday segment, which this falls directly right into it. So I guys hope you enjoy on deadlifts and farmer's carries. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Gym, the Performance Podcast, and the growth that we're doing here. It seems like we're getting a pretty good amount of traction early on in our existence. And I guess the biggest reason I'm recording this part at the end of this podcast is to kind of reach out to everyone and ask, let us know what you're looking for. Again, the idea of this podcast is to give a shining light on some of the great minds essentially in Columbus, Ohio to begin with, and then hopefully we expand to get some of the best minds in the country, and even maybe, if we're even lucky enough, the world. But the main focus of this is to let's attack the word performance and see what that means to some of these great minds and great coaches out there. And what better way than asking our audience, what is performance to you, and how does it relate in your everyday, and how you want it, your performance to increase, and what things can we teach, or what things that you are struggling with when it comes to performance. And that is kind of our goal here, is to help as many people as we possibly can and make it somewhat entertaining if that's even possible. But so this is my call out to you, the listener, and say, hey, what can we do to make this podcast more entertaining and more educational for you, the listener? Just shoot us up and let me know. And thanks again for listening.